Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the seminar Challenges in Academic Careers, which is organized by the Higher Education Team of the Finnish Institute for Educational Research here at the University of Jyväskylä. My name is Terhi Nokkala and I work here as a senior researcher in this research institute. The seminar is a closing seminar of our research project that is titled Academic Careers in Finnish Universities. The research project, which has run from the beginning of 2015 until the end of this coming September, is funded by the Finnish Work Environment Fund. There's been three of us researchers involved. The project has been led by Professor Jussi Välimä, who just entered the room. And I've also been involved, and the responsible researcher for most of the actual research work has been our project researcher, Taru Siekkinen. And I've just been told that it's customary to announce the size of the grant. So it was we received 60,000 euros for this project. We have in this seminar, closing seminar, we have been able to invite two researchers also from other universities. So this session will be begun by Assistant Professor Teresa Carvalho from the University of Aveiro and from the Research Center of the Higher Education Policy in Portugal. She will be talking about challenges and changes in academic profession in Europe. This will be Teresa's presentation will be followed by project researcher Taru Siekkinen, who will talk about the main results from this project. This will be followed by a short coffee break, and the seminar will be rounded off by a presentation of Dr. Olli-Helena Ylijoki from the University of Tampere, from the Centre of Knowledge, Science, Technology and Innovation. And she will talk about what is the means of, what does it mean to be an academic, academic identities in flux. The seminar will be recorded and can be viewed afterwards in the University of Jyväskylä multimedia platform Moniviestin. The link to the recording will be at the seminar webpage, which you can access through the Finnish Institute of Educational Research website. This information is already there, so you can look at the link. But I think it'll take a day approximately for the recording to appear on the website. But due to this recording, it's very important that if you want to comment or ask questions after each presentation, it's important that you speak to the microphone. And there is a little button in this microphone that'll turn into mute or activate the microphone. So when you're speaking, then make sure that the green light is on, and then we can get the information onto the, or the mic will actually take the recording. So Teresa, please, the floor is yours.
Okay, so thank you very much, Terry, and thank you very much for inviting me to be here. It's a great pleasure for me to be here and to participate in this third summer school. As Terry have already said, I'm going to talk about the challenge and change in academic profession in Europe. But as this is a summer school, I've decided to focus mainly in the theoretical framework of the sociology of professions, in the empirical changes that have been noticed in academic profession in Europe, and in the challenges that we have for the future. So I hope this is what you were expecting for. Okay. So when we talk about academic profession, one of the main questions that usually arise has to do with the, using this concept of a profession to classify academics. In fact, most of the, some researchers, I will not say most, but some researchers do not agree that it's possible to use the concept of a profession for academics. For instance, Guy Neave, one of the well-known researcher in higher education, says that what we should use is the term academic estate. And why? Because one of the main features of academia in Western Europe has been its formal status as a state service. That is a service provided by the state, funding overwhelmingly from the same source and with members and their conditions of service aligned on parallel ranks and conditions to those in national or regional administration. This academic estate means that academics upheld the national integration and are, in fact, a statement of national identity and achievement. Actually, this discussion about what is a profession and what kind of groups can be classified as a profession was one of the main interests in the sociology of professions. When this area of knowledge started to be developed in the first half of the 20th century, this was the main question, and two important theoretical frameworks emerged to try to answer this. Sorry. One was the functionalism, based on the ideas of Talcott Parsons, and mainly what they have tried to do was to identify and classify the main characteristics of a profession that distinguish it from other occupational groups. In fact, they have come to some specific characteristics like having expert knowledge, having autonomy, have a specific set of norms and values, but they were accused of somehow reproduce the social representations that were dominant at that time about the professions. Because, for instance, doctors were already identified as a profession, while, for instance, nurses were identified as a semi-profession because they didn't have all these characteristics. So the symbolic interactionism said that more important than identify these characteristics, what is important is to focus on how professions construct their status and the privileges they have in society. So it's the focus turned to be on the process of becoming a profession and not in their main characteristics. Along the 70s, the focus turned to be on power relations. Terence and Johnson, in the beginning of the 70s, called the attention to the importance of the power relations between professionals and clients. And he said that this imbalance between the two was based on the expert knowledge. So expert knowledge is an important feature for any professional group. At the same time, or along the same decade, Magali Larson also talked about the importance of knowledge in constructing the monopoly a profession exercises over the market, but that was obtained mainly through higher education, to credentialism, and promoted, based on the previous writers of Max Weber, a social closure process. However, Magali Larson said that having knowledge is not enough. The protection of the state for the professional groups is also an important characteristic to recognize a legally a professional group. And Elliot Friesen was probably one of the sociologists that have written more about professions and professional groups. And he also claimed that there is another part of a profession that is highly important, which is the organization of work and the monopoly they can obtain through a specialized area of knowledge and an specialized task within the division of labor. This is also supported by the credentialism, by obtaining expert knowledge that is based on credentials from higher education. Another important concept introduced by Elliot Friesen is the concept of professionalism. Friesen had, in fact, a very positive notion about professions and professionalism. And professionalism was, for him, interpreted as a third logic of organizing society. So we had the logic of the market, the logic of the bureaucracy, and against this we also have the logic of professionalism based on a set of norms and values that define the professional's behavior that is expected to be more oriented to serve the others than to any other factor. Andrew Hebert talks about the system of profession. To these authors, we can only understand professions if we look at them as in a systematic form, if we look at the way they compete with each other in creating a hierarchy of professions. So what we have is that different professional groups contend for specific jurisdictional fields, and the knowledge is again the important resource that professionals use to protect this field for themselves. But Andrew Hebert's called the attention to the importance not only of the external factors in changing professions, but also to the internal ones related with the differences inside the professional groups. And so these pressures brought from outside and from inside can in fact put in question the traditional jurisdictional area of some professional groups. Lately, as usually happens in almost all theoretical fields, the gender perspective also emerged in the analysis of professions by the hands of Anne Witts that reflected on the relations between professionalism and paternalism. So she says that professions usually define strategies to secure their own position within the system of professions, but also to exclude women from some specific positions and some specific opportunities in the labor market. How? By restricting the access of women to some resources, such as, for example, some general skills, knowledge, credentials, and expertise. So somehow they were ineligible in some specific occupations. Nevertheless, one needs to pay attention to the differences in the concept of a profession between the Anglo-Saxon and the continental Europe. What happens is that in the Anglo-Saxon context, the professionals are usually associated with a specific form of profession, which is the liberal professionals, like doctors or lawyers. But in Europe, usually we refer or we use the word profession to many other occupations, and you usually don't make these clear differences. So some French authors are also important for us in trying to understand what is a profession. Dubar and Ribier identified it in this sense four different dimensions of the concept of a profession. We can use profession as a statement when we are mainly reflecting on professional identity, profession as a métier, meaning as a vocational specialization for doing some work, profession as employment, and we all have this in our national statistics when we have a specific designation for the professional classification, and professions can also be interpreted within this context as a role, a professional which designates somehow the professional position inside the institution. So, to these two authors, the profession can be defined as a fluid set, segmented in a permanent evolution, reassembling people who share one activity with the same name, with social visibility and enough political legitimacy during a significant time period. So taking this definition and also taking the organizational professions perspective of Magali Larsen, saying that some professions have emerged within some specific institutions and developed always associated with some institutions, but in practices have the same characteristics of some other liberal professionals, I think we can actually use the term profession to classify also academics within this large perspective. And in fact, the academic profession is the most interesting group to analyze. They are involved in the production of producers. Somehow, academics are the ones who produce the knowledge that legitimate the existence of other professional groups. And somehow, producing new knowledge or new areas of knowledge can be a way to create new professional groups within society. So academics have an important role here. But academics also bring many challenges to the sociology of professions because academics never face the need to contend with other professional groups in the same jurisdictional space. The power relations with the state seem to be always the main pillar upholding its material and symbolic power in society, and they in fact always enjoyed a privileged status in the system of professions, in a sense that some authors say that academics are an elite or a key profession within society, or should I say were. Because the context is in fact changing, as we all know. Some of these changes have to do with the welfare reforms of the state, and in this sense we have seen a redefinition of the central role of the state and the withdrawal of state financial support to public services that supported many of these organizational professions. There is an increasing critical tone emerging concerning the privilege the state concedes to professions, legitimated by this general environment, in a great extent also in mass media we have some news about misbehavior of some professionals, and the state, based on this new environment, renegotiate or even eliminate certain protections that used to provide to some specific professions. Simultaneously, the professional bureaucracy, as we have already heard about this morning, has the organizational model that used to characterize most of the public institutions, which was accompanied by high levels of professional power, is also questioned. And public organizations, especially higher education institutions, are being somehow reconceptualized as unitary organizations or complete organizations, in a sense they are much more top-down perspectives. So, new public management by redefining the state and public organization based on managerialist narratives, norms, and values questions also the welfare's traditional professionalism. And there is a huge discussion in the literature if professionals maintain or not the traditional norms and values associated with professionalism. So changes in system steering brought major revisions to the traditional role of the state, which is not anymore a Weberian remit of direct control, but is increasingly more a panoptical function, like Foucault would say. So, which is based on increasing, more complex accountability systems, both for institutions and for professionals. Simultaneously, we have been assisting also to some system diversification, both in institutional types and varieties, in actors, and also in curricular assumptions. So now, as we all know, higher education institutions are now expected to respond to social and market expectations. So within this knowledge economy and knowledge society, academics lose the almost exclusiveness they used to have in producing knowledge and are pressured to transfer this knowledge to the economy and even to assume more entrepreneurial cultures and more entrepreneurial behaviors. In what concerns the higher education system and the higher education institutions, we have been assisting to an increasing number and diversification of type of institutions, a decrease in the students-teacher ratio, and the system have been as turned more inclusive all over Europe for students and even also for staff. But we have also assisted to change in governance models inside higher institutions that have been created new power relations and new power networks inside these institutions. So, these new organizational and governance models have some potential impact over academics, because what we have now is a top-down collegiality. We have some deliberative bodies which have decreased additional power. Decisional power. The stakeholders starting playing an important role in organizational decisions. Academics leaders gain increased responsibility and decision-making power. So they are becoming academic managers and they are increasingly treated as leaders and not as primus inter pares anymore. Also, there are increasingly more new and predetermined rules for academic work. They have formal objectives both regarding their teaching, their research, and even their service activities. And this is said to limit the self-determination of the agenda of academics. There is also a regular assessment of academic work that has been done by increasing the administrative control inside higher education institutions. In recent years, these transformations have been quite steady, and there is, in fact, an increasing number of publications in the last years about academics and the transformations in the academic profession in Europe, mainly due, not only, but also related with two big projects, one international, the CAP project, Change in Academic Profession, and the other European, the EuroAct Academic Profession in Europe, that some of you have already heard or even participated in this project. So, I'm now trying to summarize the main findings of these publications based on these two studies, which is a huge work, but it's in somehow more synthetic ways, obviously. So, based on these empirical results, we can say that, in fact, we have noticed differences in academic profession, but these distinctions are different if we look at distinct levels. When we look at the macro level, we can see that academics maintain the control over the main decisions concerning their professions. In fact, academics are still assuming strategic positions at the political decision-making level. Academics are still part of many governments in Europe and many of the ministries of education and ministries of sciences in many European countries are academics. They also maintain the control over the definition and of the evaluation and assessment. So somehow they maintain the self-regulation over their own profession. Who maintains? Some specific subgroups inside the academic profession that we can classify as an elite, who are sitting in research councils, in the editorial boards, and in the evaluation agencies. So, some authors say that these reforms, in fact, have empowered the academic elite. Or, as I've wrote in some other work, academics, in fact, are still considered as organic intellectuals within society. So their opinion is still important. When we look at the meso and organizational level, the changes are different. There is a tendency in Europe for academics to consider that executive power is a key factor in influencing a high range of decisions within institutions, and that there is an intensification of higher education institutions' top-down management styles. So this is mainly related with the decreased participation in collegial bodies that we have mentioned before in the governance models. Nevertheless, important differences are found between based on age or on the position in the academic career. So junior academics feel that their influence on definition of key institutional policies is marginal. So if all of them feel that there is an increase in participation, junior academics feel even more. And on the other hand, at this meso organizational level, we also see that there is a redefinition of professional boundaries with administrative staff, and academics are assuming new roles, as the administrative staff are also assuming roles associated with the traditional roles of academics. So Celia Wichers talks about the blended professionals in this sense, that they aggregate both traditional roles. Finally, at a more micro and specific level, we have the level of practices related with the academics' capacity to apply their professional knowledge and expert skills in the narrow context of the working practices of their main domains, usually in a Humboldtian perspective, defined as the teaching, research, and service activities. So it refers mainly to the discretionary judgment that academics can have on the occupational control over their work. And in this sense, there is a decrease of academics' capacity to have discretionary judgments, mainly based on indirect mechanisms. Why? Because we have been assisting to an increasing in insecurity of employment with more part-time and short-term contracts, an increase in workload, and also in the split between the teaching and the research roles, with research roles being more valued than the teaching ones, and somehow predetermined also more than the teaching ones. In what concerns the working conditions, some important studies have been developing in trying to define what is the paths of an academic career in Europe. And usually, most of the studies came with this framework based on four different distinct levels that start with doctoral study, employment in postdoctoral and junior positions, employment in lower senior positions, and finally, for some employment in higher level senior positions. This is not common to all European countries. For instance, many European countries don't have the doctoral students inside the academic career, and they only have three levels of or three paths within academic career. However, what these studies have concluded is that in all the steps within the academic career, they are increasingly more based on competition. Nevertheless, it's important to say that even if it is assumed that the doctoral degree has a relevant role in academic career in Europe, there are still many higher education systems where the presence of professors with a doctoral degree is still very low. We have here the example of Italy, where there is some unemployment of young academics who have a PhD, but they only have 33% of their academic staff with a PhD degree. So what these studies conclude is also that entering into academic career is increasingly more competitive, and it's not enough in Europe to have a PhD degree to be able to enter into the career. And what's happening is that some, taking the unemployment levels of PhD in Europe, some of them are now looking for alternative career paths. This started mainly inside higher education institutions, because there have been some political incentives for private enterprises to employ these highly qualified human resources, but this only happens in some very specific disciplinary areas, and it's residual. So what we have is PhDs now looking for alternative career paths inside higher education institutions also. So we have this new semi-academic and semi-managerial PhD levels in university services, which have emerged side by side with a more traditional academic career track. There are also important differences in the career based in age. A substantial gap exists between junior and senior academic staff. Junior academic staff have more short-term contract and part-time employment, while senior academic staff still enjoy from stable employment and freedom to shape their own activities. So, despite some difference between the different European countries that were included in these studies, in almost all of them, junior academics seem to work fewer hours than the senior academics, devote more time to research than to teaching, although they benefit from fewer opportunities to engage in international research, and probably due to this, they publish less than senior academics, and guess what? Are less satisfied with the profession. So, but this is something that is happen in all level. So we have now an academic career that is based on competition at all levels, and this competition is related both with employment, in trying to secure a position in the system, retaining a post in the system, or progression up the academic ladder, but this competition is also related with securing research funding, which has become increasingly more important for higher education institutions. So, taking this general perspective about the academic profession in Europe, we can talk about different types of segmentation within the academic profession. We have an institutional segmentation, because institutions are vertically differentiated based on their symbolic power within the system, especially in those systems like Portugal and Finland, where we have a binary system with polytechnics and universities, but also based on the increasing importance that rankings have in present a vertical perspective of the system and of the institutions. There is also some role segmentation within the academic profession. There is a diversification of academic roles, with those associated with research being socially more valued and recognized. The permanent staff are progressively pushed either into a research or a teaching career track according to their qualification in these assessment exercises, and especially according with their success or their capacity in getting some grants and bring some money for their institutions. There is obviously also, based on what I have said before, a generational segmentation. It seems that there is a small elite of senior academics who maintain the traditional prestige and working conditions, having at the same time the control over the main decisions about academic career. And there is an increasing subgroup of junior academics that constitute like a reserve army for higher education. Usually they have worse working conditions and less structural and organizational autonomy. Finally, we still have also a gender segmentation within academic profession. There is increasingly a perspective that we'll have a feminized future in higher education. And in fact, it's true that women increase their participation in higher education, but this was especially true at student level. And even if there is a regular historical growth at professional levels, the shares of women decrease throughout their academic career, even within the same age cohort along the several countries that in Europe were part of this study. It is important to say that also some countries in Europe still have very low percentages of presence of women in academic staff. You have some examples here of Switzerland, Germany, and Netherlands, where women represent a few percentage than in other countries. Another thing that seems to be important for this gender segmentation is its relation with the generation, because women account for close to half of junior staff academics. So in some countries in Europe, like Portugal, Finland, Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Switzerland, and UK, women are more concentrated in institutions and also in disciplinary areas that are socially less prestigious. For instance, in Portugal, we have more women in polytechnics institutions than we have in universities. So what this says about the reconfigurations of the academic profession in Europe? there is a small elite of organic intellectuals who see their power and control over the profession reinforced, and they somehow can be seen as assuming the hegemonic normative and professional identity. The autonomy is maintained at a structural or macro level, but is less evident at the organizational level. And obviously, there are relevant differences between subgroups within academia. At the same time, there is an increasing segmentation of the professional group, which assumes different dimensions, as I have previously referred. So in this discussion, if in fact the process of creating a profession is always a positive one and we are always in a professionalization process, or if the professions can also see some retreat in this process and starting have the professionalization tendencies, we can say that there are in fact the professionalization processes within some specific subgroups within academics in Europe. So, taking all these works that have been done about academic profession in Europe and taking these empirical results, it's now time to turn back to the theories of the sociology of professions and try to reflect on the challenges these empirical results bring for the theoretical framework of the sociology of professions. One of the first great challenges is this idea that a professional group is not a homogeneous body. In fact, from now on, empirical analysis about academic profession cannot consider anymore academic profession as a unified actor. It is useful to probably go back again to the studies of Andrew Abbott and try to analyze the importance of the internal differences inside the professional groups within the new context of the new public management and managerialism. These studies seem also to reveal that higher education institutions and the state are not static entities devoted only to internal dynamics and motivations of their own. So, in my perspective, it is useful also to start analyzing the role of academics in structure the system within which they operate. Is it useful to explore more the academics' influence over their institutional environment? Somehow, the studies that I've been talking about start with the changes in society and in the state, see how these influence the changes in higher education institutions and especially changes in the governance models, and then try to see how these affect the academic profession. So the changes in academic profession emerge at the end of these general trends of changes within society. It can be interesting to revert this and try to put academic profession at the top and see how academic profession can in fact influence the changes that have happened or are happening in society, or more specifically in the political context and in the reconfiguration of the state, and also see what is the influence of academics in the changes that are happening inside higher education institutions and how these also affect the academic profession as a whole. So, we still have a lot of work to do, which is good for us as researchers. So there are a lot of questions that we can now try to answer from this, from the results of these empirical studies, and that may contribute to increase the theoretical perspectives about the professions. So we know now that we, in fact, have many internal differences and different identities within academic profession. What is interesting also to ask is what is the common features that are in which are based the academic profession, which are common to all the different identities that we are able to identify. Another important question is how are academics facilitating or enabling the emergence of new professional groups within society? It is particularly relevant to analyze the relation of academics with managers inside higher education institutions and also the emergence of researchers as a new professional group outside academia. But this raises another important question about the effects of changes in the way knowledge is produced for academic professions. Somehow, academics lose their main task within the division of work to produce knowledge. Important questions that are still important to answer are, for instance, who has the authority of public discourse within the profession and how did they get this authority? We know that we have now different perspectives within the profession, different professional identities. As we already heard this morning, we also know that some academics resist to the changes that are imposed within higher education institutions, but others comply with them. So what makes some resist and others not? And who has the authority of public discourse of the academic profession? What is the professional's role in defining the structural environment and under which they operate, and when, why, and how academics engage in change of their institutional environment are some of the challenges that we have for analyzing academic profession within the next years, hopefully. So, thank you very much for your attention.
I would now like to thank Teresa once again and open the floor for a discussion. Please introduce yourselves and speak to a microphone so that we can record all this.
Hi, Teresa, and thank you very much for a highly interesting discussion. It was very interesting. I was very interested about the picture, how the academic profession can more influence what changes is happening in society and state. I was wondering how this can happen, like how we can turn this picture around, that we can be more active, not just objectives for the changes.
Thank you, Staru. This is a very interesting question. And obviously a difficult answer. There's many ways, and probably the fact that some academics are leaving academia and starting working in other institutions may be a way to improve also or to contribute to society. Not only to have produce knowledge in a way that is possible to bring more money for the institutions based on the research grants, but to produce knowledge based on the reality they are facing within other types of institutions. This can be one of the ways, but there are many others, I don't know. Thank you.
So thank you, Teresa, for your presentation. And my name is Jani Ursin. Well, being also pretty much in the same research field, I mean, in higher education in general, the question that always comes into my mind is that really how much different the academic profession is from the other professions. Because, I mean, you, for example, described briefly about the career structures and issues related to that, as well as the gender segmentations, but do you have any view on that, that if we just look at the profession, so how much academic as a profession, let's say, differs from, I don't know, IT professions or MDs or whatever, similar professions?
Actually, I've done some, thank you for your question also, it was interesting. I've done some research comparing the academic profession with health professions. And one important thing in academic profession that differentiates it from the others is the importance of producing knowledge. Usually, the others don't have this capacity within their fields. And in a great extent, the legitimacy within the academic profession, for instance, to progress within the career, are based on the capacity to produce knowledge, which is something that doesn't happen in other professions. Taking the gender composition, it depends a lot on the type of professions. But if we look at professions that are at the same level in the system of professions, they are really similar because there is this general association of paternalism and professionalism. So we tend to associate the professions with men, taking some specific cases where there is the opposite happens. So it depends. It has some perspectives that are very similar to other professional groups, but others are distinct. And for instance, the power relations are much more centered in the production of knowledge.
Thank you, Teresa, very much for your presentation. I think that one of the reasons why we may be a bit silent is that we are so impressed by the perspective that you presented on professions. I will not go into ask about the professions, but I'm. One of the things that has puzzled me during the last years is the empirical research on the CAP study, where they say that that academics are more satisfied with their work than what they used to be, what they were during the previous study. And this makes me to ask, what do you think, what's the reason? And the second related to that is, why on earth we still have newcomers to the academic profession because it's so insecure?
Okay, thank you very much, Yussi. Very interesting questions. And I think we can only understand that if we use the notion of system of professions. Because what is happening is that these changes happen almost in all professional groups. We can find empirical studies on the impact of new public management and managerialism over health professionals, over lawyers, social workers, and so on and so on and so on. So this is a tendency that is common to all the groups. And what we are assisting, in fact, is some redefinition of the system of professions that some authors say that, in fact, managers are able to have a better position within the system of professions. But when we look at this in this perspective, we also have found, for instance, in some studies in the Portuguese context, we have asked academics if they advise someone who would like to enter the academic career to go on, and they all say yes, or almost so. And why? I think it's this comparative perspective. They, in fact, feel that there are changes. The changes may not be so good as they expect, but when they look at other professional groups, they still think that the academic profession in a comparative way is a good perspective. At least is what I think. I don't know. But.
Are there any further questions? There's still time for one or more.
Thank you for your very inspiring speech. My name is Hannu Heikkinen, and I was very fascinated with how you started, actually, your presentation, asking the question if academics are professionals. And then you went on with quoting Duber and Trippier, and you introduced these four dimensions behind the concept of profession. Profession as a statement, profession as a métier, probably, I think it's France, isn't it? Okay. Profession as employment, and profession as a role. And because I actually don't know any of France, I had to take my dictionary and to look at what does it métier mean. And I think in English it might be something like craftsmanship, isn't it? So I'm just wondering, this is very exciting indeed, and I think this is very promising kind of start to theorize the sociology of professions, and I'd be more or less interested about professions in general terms, not just academic professions, but anyway. But I'm wondering, could you please explain a little bit more about this? How do you understand the differences between these four dimensions?
Well, these authors try to turn more explicit the differences in the use of the concept of a profession in the English language, if we may say. What they say is that in the Anglo context, they usually tend to use the word professional only for specific cases, which are the liberal profession. So all the studies are based on this notion. That's why, for instance, autonomy is an important characteristic of a professional group. But in Europe, the concept of a profession, if you go to the dictionary and see what is a profession, or if we think about the way we use the term profession in our day-to-day lives, we use it with different meanings. And that's what these ideal types try to somehow capt. So we can use a term as a statement, saying, I am a professional from academia. I am an academic, so I am a professional. It's somehow part of your own identity as a person. So the profession as a métier is like it's a French word, and it's similar to craft in that sense. That is, for instance, we ask the kids what the profession they want, what kind of professionals they want to be. And this can be anything. Doesn't necessarily has to be a liberal profession. We are not explicitly talking about a liberal profession. So in that sense, it's more than that. And it's usually also used in the as a employment for several reasons. Usually in the national statistics, we have a description of all the professions, and all of them are considered professions. Yes, like the cooker is a professional. And in English terms, this is not the same. And we also use the term to identify the positions inside the institutions. So we also assume it as a role inside the structure of some specific institution. I hope I've helped.
I'm afraid we are running out of time anyway, but this is very interesting indeed. But I'm just wondering, what actually is the difference between profession as a statement or an identity or a profession as a role? But anyway, probably this is something we can discuss during the coffee break or somewhere else, because I think somebody has to take the floor next. Okay, but thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
I would like to thank Teresa once again and thank you for a lively discussion. We do indeed have to move forward. So one round of applause. The next speaker will be project researcher Taru Siekkinen, who will be telling us about the results of this research project on academic careers in Finnish universities.
Thank you, Teresa, and thank you, Terhi. I have a few slides at the beginning from our research, but I think I won't going to them anymore. Terhi told us something about the project at the beginning of this seminar. So, I will start straight from our project. So, in this project, we didn't collect any data, but we used data sets from different projects that were conducted earlier. And the data sets were the projects of fixed-term university researchers in the Finnish Knowledge Society, Knowledge Economy, that was conducted in the University of Tampere School of Management. By Kari Kuoppalan, Elias Pekkolan, Jussi Kivistö and Seppo Holtta. And the other project was the evaluation project of the four-stage career model in Finnish universities. And that was conducted in collaboration between our institute and School of Management in University of Tampere. And the outputs of our project have been mainly articles and also seminar presentations about in different seminars. And our articles have related to themes precarious, academic work and careers. And I wrote a couple of articles in the book of Tietoyhteiskunnan työläinen. And also there were articles about human resources strategy for researchers. And then there were research about commitment in academic careers. And then there were a couple of articles that mostly are still in writing process about academic career structures, changes and polarization in academic careers and academic profession. And research about academic profession is closely related to what Teresa just told us, so I won't go into that very deeply. So, few words about academic career. That's also my research interest in my PhD thesis. So, it is well known that academic career is precarious by its nature. Academic career is reciprocal by its nature, with these both dimensions, organizational and individual, they are both important. As Baruch has said, careers are made by individuals, but an individual's work and career is planned and managed by an organization. Also, in academic career, the influence of discipline, cultural context, and global trends are highly significant. And what is really important and what we would like to emphasize that organizational commitment benefits both sides, the employee and the employer. However, it requires reciprocity and trust. And as also Paru has stated, today the organizations are in a competition, which means focusing more on efficiency rather than on employee relationships. So it is no longer people are our most important assets, but fewer people are our most important assets. And I think this is very clearly seen now today in contemporary universities and their human resources management and policies. So it is well known also that academic career is precarious by its nature. Especially junior academics are commonly working in short fixed-term contracts many years. And that's what Teresa also told us just before. However, there have been attempts to restructure obscure academic career paths and make it more attractive. For example, the European Charter for Researchers and Code of Conduct for the Recruitment of Researchers and human resource strategy for researchers, which is related to it. Also, there is this four-stage career model that was recommended by the Finnish Ministry of the Educational Culture and also the European Science Foundation. Also, many universities in Europe and also in Finnish universities have introduced different kind of tenure-track models. And on the next slide, I will tell a bit more about those. So, this four-stage career model will begin on stage one, a doctoral student. And stage two is the postdoctoral researcher. In stage three, the university researcher and lecturer. And stage four, the professor. However, the four-stage career model has created promises to university researchers that their career will proceed into next stage. But in practice, the career progression for researchers is not linear by the nature. Because many of the researchers are not actually included in the four-stage career model. For example, project researchers have very short fixed-term contracts. They are working with external funding. And also researchers with a grant, they are not officially the university staff. Also, the recruitments are made into certain open position, and competition for the few positions is really tough nowadays. And in general, we have to keep in mind that most of the researchers from the career stages 1 and 2 are supposed to move working outside the university. So the university have a really important task to make qualified researchers in the need of society. 10-year tracks are a way of recruiting these future professors. However, only 5% of all open positions in universities are 10-year track positions. So it really is small amount of all open positions. Also, there are few challenges in tenure track models because researchers included in that model are evaluated mostly by their research outputs. But what about teaching? What about students? What about developing higher education and the whole department? So there are some problems. Teresa was also talking about segmentations of the professional groups, and according to our empirical studies, there are some polarization process going on in academic careers. And it is supported by the universities also. Women salaries are lower in every Finnish universities and almost in every career stages. And especially in higher career stages, the salaries are much lower than men's salaries. Also, the third of professors are women, and women have more often fixed-term contracts, and grant periods are longer for women than for men. Also, the increasing demands for mobility is weakening the position for especially women with families in academia. In addition, there exists polarization between generations when young academics are facing more competition for research funding and for open positions than the older generation. Researchers' performance is increasingly evaluated and managed more strictly. Also, there is polarization between identities, and Oili Helena will tell us more about that later. And also, there exists polarization between funding sources. So, if the researcher is funded by the university or funded by from the external funded project, there exists huge gap. What kind of career progression opportunities the researchers will have? And finally, I will present something from our latest article about the three different groups of academic staff in Finnish universities whose recruitment processes and also their strategic values differs. So as we can see, there are group one, where is professional recruitments. And there, in group one, there are professors and tenure track positions, which are located in career stages 3 and 4. And those recruitments are mainly international and mainly permanent, but also fixed term. In group two, there are these organizational recruitments, where are doctoral students and postdoctoral researchers in stages 1 and 2, and also lecturers and senior researchers in stage 3. And they are open call recruitment, mostly international, and there exists a fixed term or permanent contract, both. And the last group is this unofficial and local recruitment, where are project researchers in stage 1. And the recruitment process is more informal and it's more local. And as you can see, the strategic value of the recruitment, a recruited person, is less here and more there. And the group tree is more considered as a temporary employment, and Teresa also told us this reserve army, and that is the same group. So as a conclusion, I can say that the academic profession and academic careers are changing. However, they have been always in the situation that they have been changing. They are not have been stable any time. But we are thinking that the current changes in and trends are influencing on academic careers in a way that the process of polarization is increasing. So careers are becoming more polarized. And it is a problem also that only in tenure-track model, the employer have a promise that her or his career will progress. And it's so small share of all researchers. Also, we like to emphasize that academic careers are reciprocal by their nature. However, organizational commitment need reciprocity and trust. So is there ground for reciprocity in current universities, and what kind of employer the university is, and what kind of employees the researchers are? So these are really highly interested questions. And these were just a few main points from our research, and the final report from the project will be published on the end of September. All the articles are not finished yet, and I think that some of them will be published on next year, but soon still. So if you are interested more about this, you should read them also. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Taro. Now there is about 10 minutes time for a discussion and questions and comments before we move on to a coffee break. Who would like to start?
Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm a PhD student here in this faculty, and thank you for your presentation. So could you go back to the slides about the fourth stage career model? Yes, I have one question, especially for the term doctoral student. I am aware of that there's a phenomenon here because, as I know, for example, in Anglo-Saxon context, they call postdoctoral students, but here you call postdoctoral researchers. But for PhD student, I mean, in a way, they are not really student practically because they don't get any student benefit. But on the other hand, you call them student. So I found this kind of contradiction here in Finnish context. And especially if you're international PhD student, when you apply for visa to come to do your PhD study in Finland, you have to apply for the visa as a researcher. Yeah, but if you don't have any contract with the university here, they give you the resident status as a student. So, So how do you think about this issue? Because actually it influences a lot for PhD students or someone doing his PhD study here. Because sometimes people think, I mean, in Finnish context, people usually think, okay, you're doing your PhD study. Actually, you're working. Actually, you're not a student. But on the other hand, in many ways, you are considered as a student. So how do you explain this kind of contradiction in this matter? And how is there any, or is there any nowadays, any kind of action to try to clarify the status of PhD students in Finnish universities? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. It was really good question. And actually, in I showed one slide where the initiative of European Charter for Researchers and a code of conduct for the recruitment of researchers was. So in that initiative, it is recommend that doctoral students would be actually like early career researchers. And I think some universities are using that, or junior researcher or something. But in this four-stage career model, the first stage has been this doctoral student. And I don't know why exactly. And I know there is problems, and I hope there will be some changes in considering that topic. But I don't know, is it coming or not? But it is recognized, that problem, in some places, and some universities are not using this doctoral student title.
Further questions? Well, in that case, maybe I can ask a question between. We do have some PhD students in the audience today, and I was wondering what, based on this study and other studies that you've been involved in that have to do with academic careers, what would you say as the sort of the most important things to consider for somebody who is aspiring an academic career?
Like our many studies have shown, academic career is very polarized, but there are very like good things in the academic career, like the autonomy of the work. And I also, of course, highly recommend the career because you can really do what you are interested to do. But also you have to able to take the risks and work extra hours and everything. But I think the most important thing is just it's working hard and try to actually try to understand what is going on in your research field and network a lot, and try to enjoy the good things in our work. Yeah, I think that is important.
Yeah. There is one more question.
Yep. Hi, my name is Augustine. I'm actually a master's student, but I'm considering a career in academic profession. That's why I'm here. Currently, I'm working as a research assistant, so somewhere group 3 that you mentioned. I interested in the model that you say, the 4-stage. Just want to know how long from stage 1 as a doctoral student to become like a professor that you mentioned. Any like practical data that you have?
Yeah, thank you. This is very hard question because, of course, it depends a lot on very many things.
Yep.
And not least on luck, because it depends, for example, in the available posts in the department that you are working on. Because if there are available positions open and you are very hard working, you have proceeding your career and you have gained a doctoral degree very early stage, and you have produced many high appreciated articles and teached and done everything that is required to proceed in your career. So if there are available positions, you may apply them. And if you are lucky, or you are very, very qualified, you may have them. But I think that like 15, 20 years...
Yep.
Just short comment. When we speak about the four-stage career model, you should understand that this is not a model. It's a description of different groups of people working in universities. So if you think it's a model, so then you think that you can proceed in this model. But it's not a model. It's a description of people who are working in universities. And this model was created by the Ministry of Education to bring clarity into very different professional titles and job descriptions in academia. Yeah. Sorry.
There is time for one short question.
I'm Timo Alavahala. I was thinking to comment, as you see, about the same topic. When we are speaking, there are two ways of speaking about careers. First, about as a point of view of individual researcher and as a point of view of organization. And now that document is from the point of view of organization structuring the different types of phases of academic workers. And our problem in Finland is, I suppose, that those two points of view do not meet each other so exactly. Actually, they are quite far away from each other.
One more really small question.
Well, it's interesting that, like, if you see how women progress in this profession, then you can probably suppose if you are a woman academic, how likely you are to achieve, like, the professor's position. But what about migrant academics? If you're a migrant academic, what is your likely chance of succeeding in this situation? Well, there are no formal percentages, but anyway, you can somehow project that, maybe.
Yeah, thank you. And when I showed this group one, group two, and group three, they are like group one and group two. They are, those recruitments are mostly international recruitments. So I think the universities are moving forward to international recruitments. But as we discussed earlier, the language skill, or Finnish language skill, is very important in working in Finnish universities.